This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time 12:03. Great to have you with us for the Wednesday, November 28th edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Jennifer Kuiper in for Cisco Cotto, and the Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. On today's Noon Business Hour, we'll talk about today's big market drop, also ghost kitchens in this pandemic, and on Personal Finance Wednesday, tax implications to your long-term investments. The heads of American tech giants are defending their legal shield to lawmakers in Washington. We'll cover that in our next segment. Right now, Governor Pritzker and Mayor Lightfoot have differing opinions on COVID closures, and we're joined by Greg Hines, columnist, Crane Chicago Business. Greg, usually Mayor Lightfoot and Governor Pritzker appear to be on the same page, but the mayor seems surprised by the governor's mitigation orders for Chicago. What's your take on this?
Well, my take on this is that, Jennifer, is that this has been building for a while. Although in public, the governor and the mayor seem to nod at each other and be nice to each other, there's been a series of jostling and disagreements over the last year or so, anything from pension reform to fiscal policy, including some stuff over COVID, like whether to cancel the St. Patrick's Day parade last year. If you remember, there was a difference of opinion on that. But this all came to a head in the last 24 hours when the governor announced that he was extending to the city of Chicago certain remediation efforts, specifically the closure of the end of inside restaurant service, because he said that the numbers had gotten bad enough in the city that it had met the metrics that he's imposed in other areas around the state, including suburban Cook County. Earlier in the week, the mayor's people say that they should have been notified, that they were caught unawares. This mayor does have a somewhat of a habit on occasion of getting her back up, that she thinks that she's not being fully respected and treated fairly. So they both issued dueling statements last night with lots of nasty finger pointing, whatever. They are supposed to be meeting, and in fact, they may be meeting as we do this right now. But then they have dueling press conferences. She goes first at 1:30, then he has one at 2:30. So we'll see if they've worked this out or if this terribly ill-timed feud is going to continue and worsen.
The mayor says that this closure of the indoor dining for restaurants in Chicago will hurt those who are just hanging by a thread. What are you hearing out on the street? I was hearing last week from a restaurant owner who said, listen, you know, we've been complying with these restrictions and doing what we're supposed to do. But meantime, we feel like we're being picked on because, you know, the supermarket aisles haven't gotten any bigger and the home improvement stores are busy. What are you hearing?
There is no question that this is going to hurt some restaurants and quite probably push some of them out of business. But the governor's people say that this is a matter of public health, that they have data that shows that that this disease passes most fast in bars and in restaurants where people are in close quarters for long periods of time. And that's a little bit different than a grocery store where people come in, grab their stuff, and get out. You don't sit there across from other people for an hour and a half in a grocery store. I haven't fully reviewed the data, but it is consistent with what most of the scientists seem to be saying nationally.
That's Greg Hines with Crane Chicago Business, columnist. Thanks for joining us, Greg. And coming up on tech executives are taking the heat from Congress today. On Capitol Hill today, we have some big tech CEOs appearing, Facebook, Google, Twitter. They're all making virtual appearances before Congress today as they defend their protection against legal liability. And we welcome Daniel Flatley, congressional reporter, Bloomberg News. Daniel, we're talking about Section 230. Some lawmakers want to eliminate it, and big tech CEOs want it to stay. What is it, and why this fight for and against it?
Right. Well, essentially, it provides the tech companies a liability shield against lawsuits for content that appears on their platforms. It's been around for a while, and it's received a lot of attention of late from both parties who are concerned that, for one reason or another, tech companies aren't doing enough to either limit information or misinformation on their websites, or from the Republican point of view, perhaps censoring or limiting the spread of conservative outlets or voices. So there's sort of some bipartisan interest in revisiting the section of the law, but there's no consensus as of yet as to, you know, how they would reform it or change it or anything like that. So, you know, we're getting a little bit of fire from both sides right now, but no clarity on what's going to happen next.
If it was changed or if it lifted, what financial implications could that have for Facebook, Twitter, and others? Are those guys just so big that it just wouldn't make as big of an impact as some might think?
Well, I think it would change things significantly. One of the questions that came up in the hearing was how much these companies are spending on lawsuits that result from some complaints about what appears on their sites. And basically right now they're shielded from most of that. If you were to remove that, I think it would represent kind of a threat to their business models. But the argument that the CEOs are making, and these are CEOs from, as you mentioned, Facebook, Google, and Twitter, is that it wouldn't maybe not affect them so much because they're big now, but it would stifle innovation. And so that's one of the arguments against really taking too broad of an approach to reforming or removing Section 230. So that's the argument that they're making right now, is that it would stifle innovation.
Daniel, of the testimony so far, which have you found most impactful on either side?
I actually think that there was some questioning from Senator Tom Udall of New Mexico earlier, and he's retiring this year. So sometimes when lawmakers are retiring, they get a little bit more interesting. They don't have as much to lose. He kind of pressed the CEOs to talk about, you know, how they're handling foreign election interference. And they all three said that they were still seeing some foreign election interference. And we know that was a big deal in 2016. But he also kind of pressed them on how they are moderating other forms of content. You know, how do they limit the spread of conspiracy theories or misinformation or things along those lines. And while a lot of people could agree that conspiracy theories and misinformation are bad, the trick is, you know, how do you define that? And so I think that is going to be one of the questions that is explored in greater detail as this issue moves forward.
That's Daniel Flatley, congressional reporter, Bloomberg News. Thanks for joining us. And up next, hospitals across the country are dealing with another critical point in the pandemic.
An economy of words. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The latest wave of COVID-19 is pushing some hospitals to the brink. Let's get an update in the battle against coronavirus with Dr. Rahul Kare, founder and CEO, Innovative Care here in Chicago. Doctor, are you seeing a difference in the spread this time around as compared to what we saw in the spring?
We definitely are seeing a huge increase. I think the fear is still there, but more importantly, it's this community that we're taking care of, especially the north side. We're just having a significantly increase in number of positive exposures, and we're seeing that a lot now. Those with symptoms and those with exposures, 15% of them are being positive with our numbers right now. So that's a huge number compared to what we saw in the spring and summer.
President Trump has said that it's due to more testing, but the Assistant Secretary of Health said that the increased testing alone can't explain the surge in cases. What's your take on that? Is the testing just part of this?
So testing is just the number of people we test, right? The percentage of positives are significantly up. There's no doubt about it. I think the contagiousness, and we call it the R-naught, how many people you infect after you get it, that's increasing. So although the testing is significantly increasing, thank goodness, so is the rate of positive, as well as the amount of people that get infected from other people. So I don't think it's just the amount of testing that's causing the increase in proportion of positive tests.
How about the hospitalizations? Because that's also a factor, too, and one that's actually come under scrutiny from Mayor Lightfoot and also Governor Pritzker and their back and forth about the restrictions here in Chicago. Are you concerned about those who are being admitted to the hospital and the concern about having enough ventilators if it's serious enough?
So I'm an emergency physician. I work at Illinois Masonic Hospital here on the North Side. I've worked at Northwestern for 12 years, so I have good colleagues and friends there. We are seeing an increase in patients hospitalized with COVID-19. We know that the hospitalization kind of lags in the infection rate, right? So we're starting to see a peak, almost 6,000 people in Illinois, last week. Now in one day, which is a high for us. Now wait a week, and you're going to start seeing more emergency department visits because of COVID-19 and more admissions, more intensive care unit, ventilators as well. I think that for whatever reason, the amount of people getting on ventilators and becoming as sick as they used to, the percentage has probably gone down, but the sheer volume of COVID-19 positive patients will make it so that we have more hospitalizations. And it's one of the biggest fears. It was the initial fear that we have. This is still a big fear for us of getting overwhelmed. So we'll see what the next 2 to 4 weeks hold. But as the weather gets colder, unfortunately, it may be that we do get filled and we have to set up things to protect us in that, if that's the case.
As someone who follows the development of a vaccine, how close do you think we might be?
Right. So I think closer than we were. I'm very excited. I think in January and February, we're going to start seeing a rollout. And then, it's going to take some time to mass vaccinate people. And there's still the fear of the vaccine. So it's a big unknown. This is something that we haven't had a new vaccine for a new condition in a long time that we're rushing to get to people. So I'm very excited about the vaccine that I think will come out in the next 2 months, but I think it'll get mass reproduced and rolled out in early 2021.
That's Dr. Rahul Kare, founder and CEO of Innovative Care here in Chicago. Still ahead in Personal Finance Wednesday, reviewing the fundamentals of taxes and investing.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Illinois announces over 6,100 new coronavirus cases as more suburban counties are coming under tighter state pandemic restrictions.
This is Craig Delamore. Mayor Lightfoot has criticized the governor for banning indoor dining at Chicago restaurants, but J.B. Pritzker says he is not backing down.
Professional chefs are working out of ghost kitchens as they prepare delivery-only meals in the COVID crisis. In Personal Finance Wednesday, making sure that you have a solid tax strategy for your investments. Speaking of business, the Dow right now is down 815 points at 26,647. NASDAQ is down 367 and the S&P 500 down 101. Oil is down just over 6%. New figures from the state health officials show over 6,100 new coronavirus cases in Illinois in the past 24 hours. Those numbers include an additional 51 deaths. Those numbers came out as Governor Pritzker and Illinois Department of Public Health announced new COVID restrictions for the state's Region 9, which includes Lake and McHenry counties. The order, which includes a ban on indoor service at restaurants and bars, begins Saturday. The area has seen a 7-day rolling average test positivity rate of 8% or above for 3 consecutive days, triggering the increased vigilance. Despite Mayor Lightfoot's opposition, Governor Pritzker says he won't relax the tightening of COVID-19 restrictions about to be placed on Chicago restaurants and bars.
Mayor Lightfoot has criticized Governor Pritzker for reimposing restrictions on indoor dining in Chicago for economic reasons. That industry, she says, has been hanging by a thread. But she also questions the measure the governor's using. The mayor says the greatest spread of coronavirus is coming from people's homes and social settings. But the governor says the rules on bars and restaurants will remain in place.
Restaurants and bars, by multiple studies, have been shown to be places that where the virus spreads. That shows up in all the data. And yes, it's true that in homes now, in private gatherings, that is an even higher level of transmission going on across the state right now.
Even the mayor admits that's harder to regulate. Craig Delamore, News Radio, 105.9 FM.
WBBM News Time, 12:32.
News that makes you money. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Markets are in the red. We are joined by Michael Palumbo, founder of MJP Capital and author of the book Calculated Risk. Michael, what do you make of the numbers today? Big drop. It's been this way all morning.
Yeah, good afternoon, Jennifer. Thanks for having me on. You know, you kind of saw this coming. I warned on Twitter and elsewhere that we weren't going to get the stimulus that people were expecting. Now we're seeing a big drawdown in stocks over the last few days. Some of this is COVID resurgence. Some of this is no fiscal stimulus. I think most of it is. And then some of it is uncertainty going into the election. Seems to be tightening up a little bit. And there's fear that we may not have a result on November 3rd. So you've got a lot of things to worry about as a market participant. And I think the biggest of these is the fact that the government cannot, or Congress does not seem to be able to get together on a fiscal stimulus plan, and we need it.
Looks like, have we lost all of our gains for the month? It looks like it.
Yeah. I mean, we're down 6% from the highs and still doing fine year to date, but yeah, this has been a little bit of a bumpy road, and I would expect it to continue through the election, which might set up a little bit of a relief rally, but we'll see if that actually happens.
Microsoft came out with earnings after the bell yesterday. GE released its numbers this morning. We had Boeing also. We've heard from them. What's the latest on earnings?
Well, the GE number, at least it showed they were cash flow positive. The stock's up, but you look at Microsoft and Boeing. Microsoft is a tale of two different types of stocks. So Microsoft's in the sweet spot in technology. Tech stocks are up 30% this year. Microsoft came in with $37.2 billion of revenue, beating estimates, beating on earnings, 182 versus 154. The stock's down 4%, but that's just because of the weak market. There's no signs of anything to worry about in this stock in particular. Cloud service up 22% revenue-wise. It's running on all cylinders. So Microsoft's a great story. It stacks down today only really in sympathy with the marketplace. You look at Boeing, now that's the exact opposite. So you got a stock that's right in the eye of the hurricane of this virus. Stocks down over 50% this year, came in with a loss, but it was still better than expected, and revenue number of $14 billion versus $13.8 expected. The numbers were okay compared to expectations, but if you look at it, their revenues are down over 50% in the commercial aircraft sector from last year. I mean, it is a company that is waiting for things to turn around, and the question is, when will it happen? You see these virus numbers getting worse again, so it's bad news for Boeing. I would stay away from this stock just because it could get much worse. They have a strong balance sheet, but I would stay away. So Microsoft and Boeing shows you the two different types of companies out there, and one's in the eye of the hurricane, and one is doing just fine.
Did Boeing even bother offering guidance? Some companies haven't because of the pandemic, giving that excuse.
Yeah, but Boeing has been kind of coy because the numbers are just so unpredictable, and they don't know when they know orders are coming back, but they just don't know when. So it's very hard to time them and to give you a good guesstimate as to when the revenues are going to come in. I mean, thank God for their defense segment because that's the one part of the company that's holding up. But until we get the virus coming under more control, and that I don't think is going to happen until at least the spring, until then you're just not going to have demand for flying. And then that's going to hurt Boeing for many quarters to come.
And looking ahead, it looks like tomorrow's a big tech day for earnings.
Well, you know, we've had a lot of the tech names already, but we still have some of the biggest ones to come. If you look at what has happened in the last few quarters with Apple, with Microsoft, with Amazon, these stocks have all outperformed their numbers, and then the stocks have gone up. Now, today, Microsoft's bucking the trend, but overall, these stocks have been safe plays because they have near monopolies, and they're in areas that are not affected by the virus. So I think you're going to see great numbers continuing from the tech sector, but it's some of these other areas, the entertainment, travel, restaurants, those are the ones that are keeping the market from moving forward.
That's Michael Palumbo, founder of MJP Capital and author of the book Calculated Risk. Thanks, Michael. Up next, Ian, Personal Finance Wednesday, making sure your investment and tax strategies are in alignment.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday. This afternoon, we're focusing on investing and tax strategy. Let's get some help from Craig Bolanos, founding partner and chief executive officer, Wealth Management Group out of Inverness and Downers Grove. Greg, what are the top tax implications investors need to consider?
Well, it's never what you make, it's what you keep. So we're spending so much time working with people right now on the basics. And one of the most basics is just asset location. Use those IRAs, use those 401ks to hold your higher yielding securities, your real estate investment trusts, your high yield bonds. And in those brokerage accounts or those taxable accounts, that's ideally suited for your growth stocks where you can benefit from favorable long-term capital gains treatment. That's the first thing that's on my list. But in a market that's so topsy-turvy, like 2020 has been, don't forget to do your tax loss harvesting.
Well, let's tell a little bit more about that. Can you give us some more details?
Yeah, well, even in the best of times, not every investment's going to be a winner. But there's a silver lining because you might be able to use your losing stocks to lower your tax bill. What am I talking about here? Take a look at your portfolio and look at maybe selling some of your underperforming investments that you lost money on. You can then use that loss to offset other capital gains that you've had and then redeploy that money into investments that might be better suited. You know, a simple trade that's happened this year, lots of people have rung the register for profits on the technology side, and in order to mitigate the capital gains tax bill, they've been selling off some of their industrial stocks that have been laggards thus far in 2020. But the truth is, Jennifer, taxes are absolutely becoming a bigger factor for investors because of all of the deficit and stimulus spending that's out there. It just deserves more attention.
What about tax on dividends?
Well, not all dividends are created equal. I mean, I tell clients all day long, do you want to pay a 20% maximum tax rate on dividends, or are you willing to pay upwards of 37%? I think 20% is cheaper than 37%, so people should be looking at their tax return and trying to focus their investments on qualified dividend income as opposed to ordinary dividend income. And that's a similar conversation that really investors today should take a look at tax-free interest, tax-exempt muni bonds versus taxable bonds, because there's an arbitrage up and down the yield curve today.
All right, you've got my head spinning. So give us the bottom line on this one, Craig.
The bottom line is your first decision, every decision needs to be made with an eye on your personal tax return. You can't necessarily control what the market's going to give you. You can't necessarily control the direction of interest rates, but with proper planning, you can create tax leverage that boosts the amount of money that you keep, and who shouldn't be focused on that?
That's Craig Bolanos, founding partner and chief executive officer, Wealth Management Group in Inverness and Downers Grove. Thanks for joining us. And join us at this time tomorrow for Technology Thursday. And still to come, how the ghost kitchen is becoming a key component of the pandemic for restaurants. Personal Finance Wednesday is sponsored by Mesereau Wealth Management.
Cash, credit, debit, and totally free. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The pandemic has created a greater need and demand for delivery-only meals. Let's learn how some chefs are turning to what are called ghost kitchens. And we check in with Doug Roth, founder and president, Playground Hospitality. Doug, what is a ghost kitchen?
Well, good afternoon. A ghost kitchen is actually a kitchen that is not located at the restaurant. Specifically, Chicago being a very dense area, it's usually located somewhere where the rent structure is a lot less than being downtown or in the River North area. And what happens is, as a chef, either of a restaurant or someone who has a new concept, you can rent it from the landlord. And the landlord being a facility such as Kitchen United, which is a fairly new company, Cloud Kitchens, and even US Foods right now is involved with it as well. So it is a kitchen away from the restaurant that is meant for the purpose of only for delivery by Uber and, for instance, other carryout companies as well.
Is it something that's been building in recent years and the pandemic just kind of spurred that that growth, or is it something that is really brand new?
Well, I would say it was pre-pandemic and was starting to get traction at that point. It really has gotten traction now. Actually, what's happened is the consumers who want to have less contact or less human contact with their food are moving in that direction, and actually have had about a 52% increase in activity with these type of kitchens, with the ghost kitchens.
Doug, who are some of the biggest players right now when it comes to ghost kitchens?
When you ask that question, as far as companies?
Larger restaurants that are doing this.
You know, at this point, there are many. I'm understanding, for instance, there's lettuce that's involved in some aspect. I believe, in fact, they may even have their own facility. You have also Fazoli, which is an Italian concept. And then you also have the independent who's just saying, listen, I have a grilled cheese concept like Bitter City Melts, and I don't want to put up with having a restaurant, and I'm just going to have a ghost kitchen and do it from there.
Sounds like you're with that, you know, getting rid of that overhead. It's a big financial boon for somebody who's, you know, looking to try to survive during this pandemic.
You bring up a really good point, because what happens is that obviously trying to survive during the pandemic, especially what's going on, obviously, that you've been reporting in the last hour, it's going to get really tough. And as a result, if you have an opportunity to be in an environment that doesn't have the fixed costs like the real estate and obviously rent, it's going to be a much better way to do it. Also, the cost of entry is a lot less expensive than having to go, obviously, and create your own restaurant.
And Doug, before we go, what's your thought on the clampdown on restaurants here in Chicago now?
I understand both sides. I feel extremely badly for my brethren, so to speak, who are in the business at this point. I truly believe it has nothing to do really with the restaurant itself, meaning the fact is, if you have good ventilation in the restaurant, and that's what it's all about, it's circulation in the restaurant, it's bringing air, it's converting the air on a 6 to 7 times basis, then you're not going to have a problem. If you don't have the HEPA filters, get them. It's going to help. So that being the case, I wish they could stay open, but you also have to have the same precautions and safety in mind of your guests.
And Doug, that sigh said a lot. So thanks for joining us this afternoon. And if you missed any part of today's show, you can go to our stream and just skip back to the time you want. There's a pause and rewind function that works both online and with the radio.com app. Again, thanks to Doug Roth, founder and president, Playground Hospitality here in Chicago.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.